I'd like to begin by thanking the supporters of our research, Cotton Incorporated, the North Carolina Ag Research Service, and the USDA Risk Assessment Competitive Grants Program. Also, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Ms. Cabrera, who's a PhD student in my laboratory, Van Krishmar, another PhD student, and Jack Batchelor, Hannah Barak, and Clyde Sorensen, that are faculty and has helped us with the field aspect of this work. There are a number of approaches that have been talked about in this session this morning to the detection of insect resistance to pesticides. We just had a talk about the pros and cons of work in the lab versus the field, which I think is very relevant. One approach could be just wait for insecticide failure. Of course, this is probably not one that's desirable, but certainly would work. Another are biochemical markers, and I work with a good example of this in tobacco a number of years ago, where the Dorn aphids turned red when they became resistant. That was very convenient, but it's probably not something we can count on very often. We talked about biochemical assays for enzymes. We've developed our own novel substrates for monitoring, easily monitoring esterases, microtiter plate assays we developed for looking at P450s. The problem is resistance comes in many different ways, different enzymes, target site, transport, behavioral, and it's kind of hard to predict these sometimes with these markers for different insecticides, different pests, different times. We now have very good direct protein detection methods, ELISA, LC-MS, MS-MS. These are very sophisticated techniques to monitor protein things at the level of the protein. Very expensive at the same time, probably not very practical for agriculture. And then we have this new transcriptomics. I talked about this a little bit yesterday in genomics. We have PCR, we have isothermal PCR, microarrays. In the near future, digital gene expression is going to be commonplace. We'll be able to monitor every gene in an insect for relatively low cost using viral sequencing or some of the other platforms for DNA sequencing. Our laboratory has been interested a number of years, though, in how to make the bioassay better. That's basically been the focus of our work. And we've been doing this using what we refer to as FDT, or the feeding disruption test. And we've been trying to look at how to use this in different ways. So this is what this presentation is mostly about. The architecture for the platform for this assay is novel to our work. It involves a 16-well plate that contains a insect test arena. And this test arena has in the center of it, that circle you see in the center, a meal pad chamber that contains a hydratable insect meal that contains a diagnostic dose of the insecticide, and this is used for resistance monitoring. This shows what this plastic looks like in a real picture. You can see the insects inside. The black dot, dark circle in the middle is the hydratable insect meal, and then there's a clear cover that goes over the top. And simply, we look at the diagnostic dose, whether the insect can produce blue poop or not, believe it or not. You know, insects that are intoxicated don't release feces. And so this is a very quick and easy to read indicator for toxicity or susceptibility. So we incorporate, this is a side view of one of these chambers, into that meal pad chamber, a diagnostic concentration of a insecticide. This shows typical results, say for a resistant tobacco budworm, for Cry1AC diagnostic dose. The insect is resistant, so it produces these blue fecal material on the white background. This is what how a susceptible insect might respond. This has been developed into a number of kits that we've made available through NC State to a number of different government and private laboratories throughout the years. These have been developed for a number of chemical insecticides, spinosyn, permethrin, and doxycarb, and others. Seems to work fairly decently for that. And the advantage of this approach is that it's just basically off the shelf. It can be stored at room temperature really for years. Resistance can be detected in sometimes as little as 2 hours. We have a paper showing that. They're really easy to read. One of the real advantages, you don't need much pesticide in that meal pad because it's very small. And this is nice when you want to transport pesticides from one area to the other, or you have to produce a particular BT toxin. And the assay seems to be applicable to a lot of different insect applications, and I'll talk a little bit about that. We did some work with Dow AgroSciences to look at developing kits for Cry1AB, Cry1AC, and Cry1F. These data is shown on the right, where we could diagnose resistance and susceptibility using the YHD2 strain for resistance. This is our budworm data, and you can see that we could effectively, using a diagnostic distinguishing dose, to separate these strains for all three toxins that we looked at. The number of false positives in the assay were very low for all three toxins, for both budworm and bollworm. And the false negatives were also fairly low for the budworm. We didn't have a bollworm-resistant strain to work with in these studies. Now, the problem with measuring resistance to multiple protein toxins is, and this is one of the challenges we had when we started working with Dow, is producing the individual toxins that are now found in transgenic plants. And it's just not easy to produce these things in an easy, reproducible way. Sometimes these toxins have to be produced in transgenic microorganisms. The quality of this, and how you purify these things from either these transgenic microorganisms or from the plant, can affect the performance. So it's really difficult to produce these kits when you don't have availability to a standardized toxin. The toxins vary between commercial varieties, and they're going to vary through time. As we can see just in Ryan's presentation today, that things are changing very fast. And from year to year, or from every few years to every few years, the landscape has changed. So we wanted to look at a different approach, and that's developing basically an artificial cotton leaf that would be hydratable, that could leave on the shelf for long periods of time, and it would represent, Wide Strike or Bogard products. So we developed a matrix for this in our meal pad chamber, as shown in this slide here, and a process by which we can incorporate into this matrix Bogard 2 leaves or Wide Strike leaves. And the way that the process works is we have a standard system in which it can take any plant material, and then we have a process by which we can incorporate that leaf into that standard system. That's basically how the process works. And then it's a question of coming up with the right amount of plant material to get a diagnostic dose. This shows the artificial leaf for Bogard 2 and also for Wide Strike on the bottom. That's basically what it looks like in an individual well. We have several different types of architectures for that assay, depending on the insect system we're working with. This shows some of the developmental data, Bogard 2 artificial leaf dose response and determination of the diagnostic dose. The diagnostic dose for Bogard 2 was 1.3 micrograms of cotton leaf per meal pad, and this produced a false positive rate of 0%, which means we could basically detect susceptibility in a very accurate way. This is the data for Wide Strike. The diagnostic dose was 42.5 micrograms of cotton per meal pad, and this produced a false positive rate of 0%. These things are very stable. This shows the work for Bogard 2. And you can see in the right, very right column for Bogard 2 that there was no statistically significant difference in response when these things have been stored on the shelf for up to 6 months at room temperature. So we believe these things, once they're made, that they are going to be very stable, and just pull them off the shelf, add 2 drops of water, and add an insect, and you're ready to go. We've taken this to the field in 3 areas in North Carolina to see if we could diagnose susceptibility using these kits. This is Moore County, Bogard 2, and Wide Strike, and you can see from these data that we were 100% correct in diagnosing susceptibility to both of these plant types. Here's the data for Rockingham County, North Carolina. Again, we were 100% effective in diagnosing susceptibility at the diagnostic dose that we had chosen based on our laboratory studies. And looking here in the center graph here, this is the data for Clayton, North Carolina, where we had the same sort of success. We also looked at the YHD2 strain of Fred Gu, and looking at wide strike, you can see that we had a very good success rate of determining resistance to the YHD2 strain. Looking at Bogard2, our error rate was much higher. There's a lot of potential explanations for this. One we think is that our diagnostic dose is actually a little bit too high based on our laboratory susceptible strain. But there are other explanations for these results that are going to have to be investigated to some degree. So this basically shows you how the assay works. Susceptibility on the right for Bogard2 and wide strike compared to the control wells on the left that don't contain any plant material. So the advantages of these hydratable artificial leaves for insect resistance detection, they allow us to have an unlimited, easy to obtain supply of the insect toxin. We just need to have the plant material. We have a standard hydratable meal pad that can be charged with the plant leaf. The assay format is easily adaptable to new insect varieties as they come online. And looking at the horizon, I think there are a number of new exciting technologies different from BT. For example, yesterday I talked in my transcriptomics presentation about our proprietary RNAi approaches for controlling cotton pest, and also about our next generation non-BT bacterial proteins that can be incorporated into cotton as a possible future replacement for the BT toxins for insect control. So they're applicable, the technique is applicable to commercially relevant multiple plant toxins, and the assays are just basically ready to go. Just add a drop of water to the assay and add the insects. We've also developed an artificial membrane now and a feeding system for sucking pests. So I hope in the near future to show that we can develop a similar feeding disruption test for insects like stink bugs and plant bugs. I think this is very doable. Our preliminary studies suggest that it should be really possible. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Peter? It's a copy of the plant in the.
But in which varietal background? I mean, there's different expression levels and different varietal backgrounds.
Yeah, so you know it'll be peculiar to the variety that you develop that you use to set up the kit.
So that's what the users produce?
Typically, the way we've been working with companies and government agencies is they have a specific request. What they want us to produce. They want the material. You have the option of getting a blank system and you charging it yourself. We've never had a request like that, however. Most people want us to put the material and have a ready-to-go system. They either provide the material for us. Typically, that's what happens, like with Dow. They provided the material for us. I'd be happy to talk to you back after about the process that we use to involve. It's not that difficult.
Any other questions? Okay, we're scheduled for a thank you, Mike.